In this episode, I sit down with my friends Paul and Dave, co-host of Wealth Warehouse Podcast, military vets, actually military attack pilots, who went from knowing nothing to practicing the infinite banking concept and expanding from 3 policies to 13 policies, 37-fold increase in premium payment, to educating the public, others, on a weekly basis through their podcast. I had fun and hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to the Bank with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And you know, I'm always excited when I have friends and clients in the studio live because I think it's better than Zoom. And today I have my friends, Paul Frugier and Dave Bedford. Now, I shred your last name regularly, but that's my best attempt.
Everybody always does.
Everybody does.
Okay. So these guys are, you know, family men, good men. They're practitioners. They're attack pilots, you know, military attack pilots, or previously,
Previously.
Yeah. You know, and I didn't know there's a difference between attack pilots and fighter pilots, but there is. There's a distinction everywhere you go. Somebody outranks somebody else, right? And they have a podcast, Wealth Warehouse. I'm excited about that. And so we're just going to have a conversation and hope you enjoy listening. We invite you to listen if you wish. But if you would, just tell us about yourself, you know, y'all, whoever wants to go first.
All right. Well, I'm sitting right next to you, so I'll go first.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate you having us on and calling us friends and colleagues because, yeah, it's been fun, these relationships we develop in this world and in this community, you know, going hunting together and all that. But anyway, so my background, so I'm David Beffert. My background, I was active duty Air Force for about 12 years. Flew A-10s, which is an attack aircraft.
Hoorah. Oh, wait, that's Marine.
Yeah, we don't really have anything cool, you know, a cool
other
chant.
Than that plane.
Well, here's what A-10 pilots say is attack.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's our war cry.
I got it.
So, you know, if you agree with somebody or you're like, let's do this, it's attack. So, there you go. Like you said, not every fighter pilot is an attack pilot. But
I just learned that.
Yeah. Every fighter pilot wants to be an attack pilot. That's what I would say.
Listen, all you pilots, I love you, okay? I'm not.
Yeah, me too. So I did that for about 12 years. Did actually a couple years attached to an Army unit as a liaison officer. So I got kind of what Paul, what his world was like for his entire career, which thank God I didn't do that. I didn't go that route. But
nobody's
but
perfect.
No, well, you're not going to disagree with me either.
Nope.
I got out after about 11, 12 years. I didn't do the full 20. I wanted more control over my life. Control is kind of a theme with everything we do in every area of our lives. And I wanted more control over my personal life. So I did that. I got out, moved to Minnesota. Don't ask me why.
Ice fishing?
I do not ice fish. I think it's the dumbest thing in the world. No offense to anybody who does. I just don't get it. But no, I moved up there, did corporate America for a couple years, hated it. Started my own business doing some real estate investing, flipped houses and flipped contracts on houses for a couple years in the Twin Cities. Didn't really enjoy that either. So started thinking, what do I enjoy? What can I actually talk about?
When was this about?
So I left the Air Force in 2014. Okay. I left corporate America in 2017, and then 2018, about halfway through 2018, I had a lot of life events going on. Like my life got kind of flipped upside down, and I reevaluated everything I was doing. And what I was doing professionally wasn't fulfilling me. And I started thinking, what are the things I'm actually passionate about? You know, I was never somebody like, follow your passion. I thought that was kind of hoaxy. But I realized, well, if I want to do something long term, I need to have some kind of, you know, passion or fulfillment from
it. At least like it, huh?
Enjoy the people I work with, yeah. Right? That's what I love about this industry. I love the people I get to work with, all my clients and colleagues. In the real estate investment game, no. I mean, anybody who's been in real estate, you deal with a lot of unsavory characters.
Not me. All my real estate peeps are cool and easy. That's why they're my peeps.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not talking about necessarily the investor so much. You know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Everybody else in that game. It just didn't fit me.
Yeah.
So I wanted to reevaluate And I thought, man, the only things I ever really talk about at length and I can talk about, you know, and nerd out on would be infinite banking, because I've been doing that since 2010.
Okay. Well, I mean, don't skip over that.
Yeah,
very interested in how, and I'm sure the listeners would be too, how you even got exposed to that and, you know, what, just that whole story.
Yeah.
I mean, don't start in 2014 and then bring up infinite banking 4 years earlier.
I mean, usually I'm pretty good at being chronological. But
yeah, I mean, your military got so far.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, let's go back to 2010. I had just come back from living overseas for 4 years. I wasn't a big investment guy. I didn't know much about money. I didn't spend a lot of time trying to learn about it. So I just saved. And I had a lot of money saved up.
Like in the brick and mortar bank or whatever.
Yep, exactly. In somebody else's bank.
Personal.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Had some money in the stock market because I didn't know what else to do with it. So somebody introduced me to this little book called Becoming Your Own Banker by Nelson Nash. And I read the book, and then I had, it took, you know, I'm not the quickest guy, not like Paul over here who got it instantly. I read the book, and then I had a conversation for about 6 months over email with a guy who was introducing this to me, an agent. And finally I caught it. Took me a while. I caught it and got policies on the kids I had at the time and the wife. And so it started with three policies. I couldn't get insured because of my avocation.
Yep.
What I was doing in active duty.
Yeah.
When I was flying.
Not necessarily active duty.
Yeah. So we
attacking, insured. Attack.
Right.
Pilot.
Yeah. Life insurance companies, for some like reason, that. Didn't think that was the safest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always felt safe.
But it's an A-10.
Yeah.
You can eject.
You can.
Like a helicopter, right?
Yeah, no. Helicopter, no, I like it. I like having a parachute.
Okay, so we'll is that good?
Yeah, so that, I mean, that was started my journey, and I just used that as a savings account. But when I got out of corporate America and started doing my own real estate stuff, I started flipping houses. That's the first time I realized, hey, I've actually got this big warehouse of capital right there, and I control the terms on that. I'm going to use that to fund the rehabs.
Been paying premiums for 8 years.
I've been stockpiling that. And that was kind of actually I had a goal. I needed a certain amount before I left my corporate job. Mm-hmm. So my family wouldn't suffer. If I didn't make any money for the next year, I'd have enough for us to live comfortably.
Yeah.
But I ended up using it to flip houses and actually got to see it in action. Taking the loans against my cash value, not having to repay them, because that 2 month flip, right? I'm going to be in and out two months, no big deal. It's my first one.
Nine months later,
finally sold it, lost $11,000.
What? No profit?
No profit. Learned a lot.
That $11,000 counting your time?
That was just strictly dollars.
That's a no.
Yeah. Right. That did not include any of my time, but it was an education.
Yeah, we all pay for that.
And I never lost money on another flip after that.
Yeah, perfect.
But that was my first introduction to how powerful this tool is and this concept that I got to see it in action. And then I started in 2018, like I said, I was like, I love talking about it. I tell people about it all the time. Why don't I just try to build a business around it so I can actually tell more people?
Yeah,
I got you. That's what I've been doing for the last five, going on 6 years now.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, tell us about yourself and then... how it all started, y'all's connection, all that.
Well, I'd just like to thank my mother. No. So Paul Fougere, it means fern in French. I found that out later in life, actually.
Love fern?
I don't know if it's a love fern, but...
just, is it an Italian fern?
No, French fern.
Just French fern.
Regular fern, I guess. always interested in money ever since I was a kid. Always knew I wanted to get into finance after my Army career. And then an opportunity arose to get into the infinite banking concept business. I was Dave's first client.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Did not read Nelson's book. I read The Case for IBC, actually, was my first book.
Well, and Nelson was co-authored.
And he co-authored it, right. And Tammy will attest to this, but I remember reading this book and I'm kind of swearing to myself reading this, like, why didn't I know about this 15 years ago, right? And then immediately I had owned whole life, regular whole life, non-participating since I was a second lieutenant, so 2003. So paying premium, not enough. But moved all those old policies over.
Like 2019, is this?
Yeah, this is 20.
Early 20. It was
yeah, actually, late 2018, early right. 2019. Okay. Went into underwriting in 2018, yep. And policies were issued first quarter 2019. And I just made the sixth premium on all four of those policies. So, and they're phenomenal.
Did you hesitate writing that premium? Did you have to think about it?
No. So my premiums increased. I went from, they increased about 37-fold. Actually, yeah, 37 times the amount of premium I was paying.
Oh, compared to the non-par, non-participating?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. No. And I still don't hesitate. And yeah. I still want to write more. You know, pay more premium, right? The
yeah.
problem's the problem, right, James? The
it
premium's
is.
The solution.
There's never a problem until there is one.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's... I always knew there was something wrong with, you know, the kind of conventional financial advice I'd been taking. You know, max out the military's TSP, your 401k, your IRAs. And I was like, well, what do I do when I retire from the Army? And I've got this huge gap in between age 42, 43, 44, and 59 and a half. I'm going to have to get another job because I can't get to any of this money you're telling me to save, right, in a qualified plan. So
100% disability helps. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no question. But I didn't know there was a solution where there was a place that I could put money, control my money, enjoy fairly good growth on the money in a tax-favored environment. But yeah, haven't looked back.
So y'all met whenever, you know, you were attached to an Army unit?
Well, actually,
sort
yeah.
of. Yeah.
Yeah, I was, but yeah. I got deployed to Afghanistan for a decent-sized deployment, and I ended up going to a planning cell, division planning, and sitting right next to this guy.
I got you.
Yep.
So we hit it off because, you know, ideologically, we're pretty much clones of each other. Yeah. And we had a lot of fun conversations in that office on anything and everything because we had a lot of diverse opinions in that office.
Yeah,
that made it enjoyable to dialogue.
Yeah, we were majors at the time, and there were a couple of captains.
So they still had to call us sir.
Yeah, there was at least one cat that might have disagreed with what we were saying, and but it was all in good fun.
Yeah, but I never told him about this.
Didn't tell me about the book or anything. Fast forward, you know, we're friends on Facebook. We redeploy. We're friends on Facebook. We, you know, didn't fall out of touch, but weren't really in touch on a regular basis. And then one day I see that he's on a real estate podcast or something about house flipping. And I was like, oh, what's he doing? Consequently, I'd kind of gotten into real estate investing and private money lending. You know, I made up my first private money loan to him and his business partner, actually.
And you were my first private loan.
Right.
And then you became my first client. But yeah, he gave us an unsecured private loan.
Yeah.
That
wow.
Kind of crazy.
What's the rate on those?
Really trusted me. Yeah. He got it all back and he got your interest.
Yep. It was 12%. Yeah. It was good. But yeah.
I give you 12?
Yeah.
That wouldn't happen again.
Thought y'all were friends. No, yeah. Kidding.
No, it was good. But I trust, you know, I knew Dave, right?
Well, it was going to be a 2-month flip anyway. It wasn't supposed
right.
to be.
Yeah, that's right.
We actually used that money for advertising, for marketing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they held that money for a long time. It was IRA, self-directed IRA money. So I felt like I could use it anyway. So it was good. They made money. I made some money.
Sure.
So it was good.
The base of capitalism right there, isn't
yep.
it?
Good but thing, I, it got me thinking, wow, if these profits I'm receiving on this money could have come back to me as money I could use in my personal life, my gosh, well, that would be better.
And then, but if it goes back to the self-directed IRA, it's just more capital in that pool of money, right?
Deferred. It is. Yeah,
you
no question.
You could use it again.
Yes. Right? Yeah. I mean, use
at
it,
some
though,
point.
To like you know, buy a new car or or whatever.
Oh, those self-dealing, you know, because I know in real estate, you know, it's self-directed IRAs or cryptocurrency or gold or whatever that you can't own or touch or hold. The self-dealing rules, and then, and I'm not saying anything that y'all are not aware of. Oh, I'm going to never pay taxes. It'll be a self-directed IRA in real estate, and I'm just going to 1035 exchange it later, and then the taxes die with me, all of that kind of stuff. Sounds really good. Makes a great presentation, but there may be a better way.
Yeah, and no question.
Outside of qualified plans, so.
Yeah, no question.
And I don't want to interrupt you. Keep going. Okay.
Yeah, where was I?
he was withholding it from you. He was sharing this.
I didn't share it with you.
Well, I don't think he knew what he had until later on.
Well, and quite frankly, I think it was like a lot of people new to infinite banking discover when they start talking about it to other people. They get that, like, you know, they get them staring at them like they got a third eyeball.
Yep.
Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Right? So it's not something that I would actively engage in.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, one day out of the blue, this is 2018, right? That book had come out in the fall, I think, A Case for IBC, fall of 18-ish. You know, Dave's like, hey, what's your address? I was living in Kentucky at the time in Fort Knox, sent him my address. This book shows up in the mail. I'm like, what the heck is IBC? You know, it's my immediate thought. I have no idea what it is. Didn't give me any Cliff's notes, nothing. Read that, you know, that book's 130 pages or whatever. You know, I read it in a couple of days, fully comprehended what it was. Did not think it was any of those things that sometimes people think, oh, this is a scam, or this is too good to be true, or there's no way people put money in whole life insurance like this. I didn't think any of those things. I didn't care about the numbers. And I think maybe I just have I'm not a details guy. Maybe I'm a more big picture, broad concept person. So I think that's helpful in this case. I was ready to go. I told Tammy exactly what we're going to do. We're going to exchange we had 10 whole life policies.
Wow.
You know, OPIs.
Yep.
Throughout the years. And,
well, wait, what is OPI?
Yeah. So the policies that I owned, we bought, a rider called Option to Purchase Additional Insurance. It's a rider that you basically get underwritten so that you have the ability to buy some level of more, you know, of additional death benefit in the future without additional underwriting.
All right. And you took advantage of all of those opportunities.
I sure did.
Along the way.
I think we missed one. maybe when I might have been in Iraq or something at the
Typically,
time.
Typically, if you skip two, they fall off.
Right. Yeah. We only missed that one, and Tammy and I both missed. I think we were both deployed or something.
Yeah.
We did. You know, it was like small $50,000 increments, right? Yep. And So ended up taking all, you know, reading the book, taking all those policies. They had, you know, we had cash value in them.
Yeah.
Over, because we had owned the policies for at that point, 15 years ish, something like that. And, moved over. I think each Tammy and I almost had identical portfolios with this certain. There's a certain brokerage that tailors to military people.
Right.
Everyone that's in the military knows who I'm talking about.
That's why they're non-participating.
They're non-participating. And I used to think of those, every OPI we did, I always thought, I'm just throwing more money down the drain. You know, I didn't have any kids, you know, early on, didn't have any kids until 2010.
It felt like an expense.
It felt like an expense. Yeah, it felt like a burden. It felt like money. And none of my friends were doing it. They're all buy term and invest the difference people.
There's a couple of firms that grow up around all the military bases that promote that too.
Yep. Yeah, they sure do. And so I looked at it as, you know, kind of a burden, necessary evil, whatever you want to call it. And of course my mind,
I mean, that's pretty common though. Like when you buy life insurance, I remember I've listened to, I mean, it's just an expense. Everybody else is doing something different. It's whole life insurance. It's the worst place to put money. I mean, that's real.
Right.
You know, it's real.
And that's how I felt. And I've told, you know, my current clients and friends now that's, you know, I felt exactly like
most of the American public when it comes to the subject of whole life insurance. No question.
Yeah.
I didn't want to buy any more. I thought the death benefit I had, I think it was $800,000 at the time. I thought, oh, it's plenty. You know, now the next generation, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, all these things. Because I wasn't using the policies for anything. The cash value was there, but I never used it, didn't know how to use it.
Death benefit.
Yep, it was just pure death benefit.
The fact is, and Paul says this all the time, most people's understanding of life insurance is based on somebody else's misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Like 100%. Because nobody truly who bashes on it, they haven't really researched it themselves.
Yeah,
they don't talking points.
Right. They'll research it just enough to support their preconceived ideas.
Yeah.
That's straight Nelson Nash right there.
Yeah. And it's the same talking points everywhere you go. You know, those. I watched a couple of financial advisors, and they have all the acronyms below their little names on YouTube, right?
So all the little acronyms that they pay for, those are licensing agreements, you know, and they're trademarks that they are paying to use, right? And, of course, you got to take an exam. I'm not saying they're not legitimate. But.
Yeah, they've taken all the government exams, so they're a CFP, and they're this, and they're that. But they know nothing about whole life insurance.
What are you talking about? Just ask them.
Yeah. I mean, they did a thing on the infinite – I sent it to Dave and a few other people. They did a thing on infinite banking. Of course, they didn't address infinite banking concept at all. They talked about the product from their life insurance insider.
Yeah. You know how much writing, you know, it's been a long time since I went through all that coursework, but you know how much space is dedicated to even collateralizing cash values? You know, CFP, CHFC, CLU, RFC, I don't care. You just name them. And I'm not picking on any of them. My question is, do you have an idea of how much space is allocated to getting beyond cash value, collateralizing the cash value? Yeah, none. Maybe at best a paragraph, at best.
Right.
Yeah, so, but they're experts. I get it.
Right. Yeah.
And it's all in love. I mean, everybody has an opportunity.
Right? Well, you know, but they've got... You know, on a video that might be, you know, 3 months old, they've got 500,000 views on it. And,
yeah.
You know, oh, yeah. That's the sad part.
And it's a sad part. And I know that, you know, those aren't our people maybe that we're looking for. You know, we're not a volume. I don't think we're a volume industry. We're looking for the ideal client for IBC is, we often say it's people just like us.
Yeah.
You know, sitting at this table. So
in 2019-ish, 2018-ish, your 1035 exchange and all of those OPIs.
We sure did.
And you were his first client.
Testing.
Yeah.
He knew nothing.
My first, four policies.
Yeah.
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 Perfect.
Yeah. Good, solid premium.
Very quickly thereafter.
Great first client. You want all of them just like him.
Yeah. Right? I said, hey, keep this coming. Keep all the referrals coming my way.
Yeah.
Your future policies. And what does he do? He goes out and gets licensed and becomes an agent as well.
Right.
Yeah. Which turned out to be a great thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about this, you know, had every client been as easy as me, I mean, man.
It'd be
phenomenal. What a phenomenal business.
Yeah. I wouldn't have to work.
Just read this book and you'll immediately know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably, I don't know. When did we all meet? About that time, 4 or 5 years ago, whenever you became an agent or I don't know.
And my first think tank, I went in 2019. I'm sure I met you there, but I don't think I really got to know you at all.
And that's when I started listening to the
podcast.
It was fairly new and he had come back from that think tank. Hey, check out this James Nethery guy. And you know, that 2019 in summer 2020, you know, I'm mowing my lawn, just listening to, you know, James and Ryan talk about, you know, a lot of my early knowledge came from, you know, from this table. So.
Oh yeah.
I gotcha. And so y'all are, y'all work together, y'all like when you went and got licensed, quit sending him referrals and you know, he's out of business. First client's wandering off the reservation.
Yeah.
Y'all.
Yeah. So we are completely independent, but of course we share mutual clients that come in through the podcast.
When did y'all start the podcast?
Valentine's Day, 2022.
Okay. Yep.
So we're
114 episodes.
We haven't missed a week, 114 episodes in a row.
It's kind of like dividends from a well-run mutual life insurance company. Never skipped a beat. Consistent every single.
Every year
paying a dividend. But every week we put out one podcast for the last 114 weeks. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that has, and what really instigated that was, the first time we went hunting together, you were there, me, you, and Paul.
That's when we talking. All, that's when I first met you.
Was that, yeah. It was at that hunting trip, I think.
Okay. I was meeting the godfather of IBC.
Yeah. In 2021, it must have been.
2021.
Right?
And yeah, that's, yeah, yeah.
That's exactly
we
right.
We were talking about starting
it
a podcast.
It was November yep. of 21, because we hunted late that year, and it was windy and freezing.
Yeah.
But it was fun. But so was there's fun. A mutual colleague that has put together hunting trips for his clients and friends, and, you know, he's a pilot. Everybody's a pilot there but me.
that's true.
And so we went pheasant hunting this way. And going again. This will be the third time. Okay, so just...
Yeah, we were having that conversation about your podcast and, you know, what have you seen from that? Has it been a good thing for your business, your clients, education and all that? And you said, you guys can't start a podcast soon enough. So that was our goal. So
how long? That was 2021?
That was what yeah.
That was November 21. November. Okay. And then we cut our first episode...
Released
the first episode in February of 22.
Okay.
So, because we spent the first couple of months trying to figure out how can we do this? Let's figure out all the ins and outs of doing this. Yeah. And then we were like, let's just hire somebody because we're not going to do this.
Yep. And that was, you know, Dave had connected with a guy on LinkedIn, young guy, Ryan out of New Jersey. Great. He had launched several podcasts, has one of his own. And just phenomenal. We both realized, and we talked about this on our own podcast, but there's no way we could have done this on our own. The editing, they coached us through, you know, the first few episodes as well. And, hey, try this, try that. Cause we were, you know, I was nervous the first several, I would say.
Oh yeah.
Very nervous. You know, the red light goes on and I'm just like,
you know, it's the idiot button.
Yeah, it's like
it's what you call the mic button in the jet. It's the idiot.
Your IQ button. Gets cut in half
as soon as you press it.
Right.
It's just I don't know what to say. Wait,
is that the eject button? What idiot?
Yeah,
what
wrong
is the
idiot one. Button? Oh, it's the mic button. Yeah.
To talk to like air traffic control.
Okay.
Like,
yeah. Okay, I got you. I got you.
Who am I? Where am I? What do I want to do?
I knew what I was going to say. Hold on a minute.
Wait, who am I killing today? Who am I dropping bombs on? To the Empire. Sorry.
No, we're always clear on that.
And
because yeah, the A stands for attack, yeah, right? That's so right. We're clear on the targets. Yep. That's cool. Okay. So do y'all just record and send them to?
We do.
Yep.
What's his name?
Okay. His name's Ryan.
Yeah.
Yep. That's all we do.
That's all we record. Do. They do all the show notes for us.
I mean, we were
us,
talking. We were talking once a week at least. Anyway. We're like, we could just do the same thing and just hit record. And make it a podcast. Of course, not everything we talk about is aired. So we always have a pre-discussion.
Yeah.
Then hit record.
You're like, Ryan, don't record, don't release this if it's recorded.
Yeah, exactly.
Or really, it's not recording until y'all hit the button.
No, we're pretty safe.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so do y'all sit down and plan what you're going to talk about, or sometimes and other times it just develops?
It's usually... You know, if something's something comes up with a current client or a prospective client or something maybe we read, maybe it's somebody else's Facebook post, maybe it's somebody else's podcast that just sparks, let's talk about that. Or if it's a book, you know, we just all read Ben Feldman's book there, which I read it on vacation. I thought
which
it was
one
a great
was
book.
It?
The Feldman Method.
The Feldman Method.
Yeah. So he didn't write it. But
he didn't write it, but it was... You know, just tremendous to read kind of how he just looked at things. And he did a lot of, you know, business continuity planning and stuff like that, which is not really our niche necessarily. We do some of that, but.
So why didn't y'all retire and like go to work for a big airline company? I mean, I know they don't typically.
He did.
Well, I actually did. Most pilots who get out of the Air Force, most fixed wing pilots, so not rotary.
I'm a rotary wing guy, so I've got some friends that are rotary that are flying for major airlines now, but you know there's more of a step to take.
Yeah.
So yeah, the easy thing though for an Air Force pilot, you get out, you go straight to the airlines.
Yeah.
I didn't want to for a lot of different reasons.
It's a lot of time away.
It's a lot of time away. It didn't appeal to me. But then after, 5 years out, I decided, when I got started my IBC business, I knew that wasn't going to pay the bills. So I needed something else. So I transitioned back into flying and actually went and flew commercial airlines for 2.5 years.
I got it.
Yeah, right before COVID hit. So the year of COVID, it was actually a real blessing. I mean, so many good things actually happened to me during 2020, believe it or not. Like, I met my wife during that period, which never would have happened if we didn't have all that downtime.
Took her to McDonald's for the first date.
Took her to McDonald's for the first 2 dates.
No way. 2 dates, huh?
2 days. Yeah. Well, it's the only thing open. And so I had an excuse.
And he's extremely frugal.
Yeah.
Well, you can cut this out if you want. she's in the North Dallas bougie. She flew down with him last night.
Yeah.
And so she's shopping.
Yeah.
And it ain't at McDonald's.
It ain't a McDonald's. We don't do McDonald's anymore. You know, when everything started opening back up, I was like, oh, well, it's too late. I'm already in love. But the other blessing from 2020 was that airlines were paying you not to fly. So they would pay me essentially half a paycheck to volunteer not to fly. So the entire year of 2020, I just focused on the business.
Yeah, I got it.
So that was great. Yep. So then halfway through 21, I quit flying.
Like, yeah. Bye, Felicia.
Yeah, exactly.
And so did you just go right from the military to infinite banking?
Yeah, pretty much. I had a decent, I think, foundation of, because I did have a good advisor at that brokerage who really taught me about whole life insurance.
I gotcha.
And really gave me the why behind it, even though I still wasn't a true believer. I think because I had the wrong product. Still good whole life.
Yeah.
Good. Guaranteed level premium. The information in that book and the other book, it was so obvious to me that it was so great that I had to, how do I tell other people about it? So I was like, I need to go do this. My wife and Kurt, you know, Tammy encouraged me to do it. My friend Hema, who's also a client.
How old is he?
She's my age. So
I haven't met
him. Yeah, she's 40. She's 43. Also a pilot in the Army, retiring same day that I'm retiring.
Your wife, did you say?
No. My friend Hema and my wife, Tammy.
Okay. I met Tammy.
And Tammy and I had the same exact portfolio from this brokerage. Yeah, we had almost the same mutual funds, although hers are doing better, but same life insurance portfolio.
Yeah. So from the other book that he sent you, you read that, you were all in, you became a client. You know, when did you read Nelson's book, and then how long was it? You know, when did you decide that, man, I want to do what he does and become an agent? Yeah, how long did that?
So I decided, I think, spring of 2020. So not too long. So about a year after I had bought my first policies from Dave, I was like, I'm gonna go do this. I was bored out of my mind in my Army job at the time, which was nice for a change, actually. And I needed to fill that void with something productive.
So really about a year.
So a year.
Around a year.
Yeah, it was a year. Learning, listening to your podcast, listening to some other podcasts, and just really being like, this is so great. I've got to start telling. And I did. I started telling coworkers about it, friends, family. I was like, did you know these types of whole life policies exist? Yeah. These are phenomenal. And here's what Tammy and I are doing with ours, and here's what our plans are, and here's what we did. And I just started telling my story, and it was resonating with people. I was like, well, I can maybe, you know, I wanted to get into finance again when I retired anyway, so I was like, I might as well start now. And fast forward, I had a very productive first year in the business, had a very productive second year, third year, fourth year, and it's better. It's been better every year. So
I got you. And then one more. What was the time between you reading that first book and then Nelson's first book, Becoming Your Own Banker?
I read them back to back.
Okay, so you got the one, and then
I read the case for IBC. I read Horsley's book in there somewhere as well, and I read Nelson's book. So I read those three were my first book, and then eventually How Privatized Banking Really Works. I've read them all the ones the Institute has put out. I've read, but it was in rapid succession. Because the case for IBC says this is not a substitute for the original book, so I bought that
immediately.
Any legitimate book does say that, in my opinion.
But, yep.
And then what about you? How long, you know, well, if I go back, you might have already answered that, but, you know, when you were, when you discovered the infinite banking concept, you were still in the military, you mm-hmm. get out of the military, you know, how did you decide, like, I want to become an agent, you know?
It was, again, going back to what do I think I could actually do? And I always wanted my own business.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the reason I got out of the military. Even when I was in the military for like the last 5 years of my career, I knew I did not want to work for somebody. I wanted to run my own business. Yeah. So it was, you know,
You're a hard worker.
Yeah. Well, and I like to be rewarded for my own hard work, not other people be rewarded for all of my hard work necessarily. Right. Even though, you know, I don't mean that in a selfish sense, but it's kind of fun to build something for yourself and your family.
Yeah.
I thought, man, I could talk about this all day long. I remember going to a real estate mastermind event in Costa Rica. We just went down there for a few days and mastermind, and there was a producer down there. And he was kind of like the guy who the real estate coach who put all this mastermind together. He got into infinite banking. He's like, guys, you got to learn about this. Yeah. And he brought his producer down there, and he just started teaching people. And he and I sat poolside and talked for hours about it because I'd been doing it, for several years. And he's actually the guy I called, when I decided, man, I think I want to make this, I want to build a career around this. I called him first and just got his opinion. He spent, you know, a good hour and a half with me telling me all the ups and downs and how to be realistic about building a book of business in the life insurance industry, which is not an easy thing to do. No. Man, started getting going and got Paul going. I was like, oh, well, this is easy, man.
I mean, that's pretty, that's yeah, pretty
it's like
cool.
A sniper, one shot, one kill. Yeah. I sent him a book, done.
Yeah. Oh, like, my gosh, it is.
It's like one shot, four kills, actually. So, yeah, got four policies right away. And then it was a struggle because I was trying to, you know, go through pilot training with the commercial airlines, focus on that. Ended up losing a client or somebody who I had, a friend who I'd been talking to about this because I never followed up with him. I get back from training. I was like, hey, Brian, you ready to move forward? And he's like, actually, I got a policy with so-and-so. I was like, well, I guess that's my fault. Just kept plugging away.
Yeah. It's not an easy business to be successful at. And I think a lot of people think they can turn it into a successful business. But it's not like going to a W-2 9-to-5 or something you get paid to do for your skill set. It's something that's, you know, I've been lucky. I never, you know, this has been my side hustle now for going on 4 or 5 years.
A side hustle. For 4 or 5 years. So what's your main hustle then?
Yeah. So my main hustle is my full-time army job. So I
you're
do
still full-time
army. I'll be hit 22 years next month, 22 years of active duty. But it was something that I never treated it like that. You have to treat it like it's your life. And I have, and, you know, and Tammy's, you know, probably ready for me to do it full time just because it's been, you know, it does take a lot of time, you know,
a lot of nights and weekends for me.
Cause I, you know, during the day I cannot meet with clients. I cannot do any of that stuff. So it's a lot of, I've got clients that schedule with me at 5:30 in the morning. And that's what it takes for me to be successful in this business. So that's what I do. But when I retire, I'm not taking any 5:30 a.m. meetings.
All of that clientele that you built up, that Saturdays and evenings, you know, so whenever you retire from the military, what if those are the only hours, you know, that they have available on them? It's like, you'll still do some of that.
Yeah, no question.
All right.
Yeah. Well, the thing is... You know, Dave alluded to this, is when you find something that you love to do, I don't look at it as work.
Yeah.
I love the client interaction, even at 5:30 in the morning, and he'll listen to this. He listens to you guys. And I love talking. You know, we'll talk for an hour from 5:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the morning. We both have our coffee. The kids are all still sleeping and our kids go to the same school.
And I love that interaction. You know, client that gets it, pays significant premium. Although I'm going to drop a dime on him. He didn't go to me first. He thought one of the guys I can do this on my own. I'll go to the company and just get a policy and.
Ooh. Yeah. Tell them what I want.
Tell them what I want and they'll build it for me. And
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's life insurance. We all do the same thing. The home office, they know.
Right? They know, yeah.
Right.
They're all paying significant premium relative to their income, I'm sure.
That's a great question to ask.
That's right.
How much premium are you paying for your policies?
Yeah. Well, what the, you know, and I'm not aware of it, and the group that has all the designations, it wrote a paper or did a podcast on infinite banking. Have your clients been sending you those, or how did y'all discover that? And,
I watch YouTube, so okay. I'm out there just, you know, I've watched these guys, I've watched some of their videos before because I like to see what's out there. I like to see what's being said because I think it can help me better serve the general public if I can say, well, this is what the general public is being told. Yeah. And, you know, in the short video, there were two, there was a 36-minute video or so that was the full length, and there was like a 6-minute maybe clip where they're really, from their life insurance insider, really getting into it. And I texted Dave. I was like, hey, very little, if anything, that these guys said is remotely true.
Yep. Right.
And it's not their fault. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, which is
But they fault. Should do better.
Yeah.
My gosh.
I used to, you know, we've talked about it before. I think Ryan has written an article like Gary North, you know, Nelson used to love his writings, and he wrote very well, and I think he was really a historian. But he got into the Christian world as a, you know, finance guy, economist, whatever. And he wrote an article. It's like, Let Us Pray, P-R-E-Y, talking about the life insurance agent, you know, praying. Yeah, sure. And I read that, and oh, my gosh, I was livid, you know, and I'm calling Nelson. I'm like, how can you ever promote this guy? You know, and how can you even like his writings? And he said, well, James, you know, he just doesn't know. And that doesn't mean everything he writes is, you know, not good. And I'm like, whatever. and then I wound up meeting that guy's son-in-law, you know, at an event. And anyway, and there's other articles out there that just shred life insurance or infinite banking concepts or whatever. And I don't seek them out. You know, they stalk us on social media just like they stalk all the ads and whatever, stalk everyone else. But if there's, you know, if I talk to someone and they're like really negative, I'm like, here, go read all that. Here's the most negative thing you can find about the infinite banking concept and just go get all you want, you know. And that may, you know, I don't know, maybe we need to increase our views. I don't know. Maybe that is worth you know, talking about it so other people can go find it. You know, if you want to support your disagreement or disbelief, you know, there you can do it that way.
Right.
We had fun going a little long today, so we're going to pick it up from here in part two.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.